Chapter 32. Here's your happy ending. 1. On my last night in Empis, I stayed where I had on my first, in Dora's little house near the Well of the Worlds. We ate stew, then went outside to watch the vast wedding band of gold in the sky that had been Bella and Arabella. It was very beautiful, as broken things sometimes are. I wondered again just where this world was and decided it didn't matter. That it was enough. I slept again beside Dora's fireplace, with my head on the pillow with the butterfly appliqué on it. I slept without night visitors and without bad dreams of Eldin or Gogmagog. It was mid-morning when I finally woke up. Dora was hard at work on the sewing machine Mr. Bowditch had brought her, a pile of broken shoes to her left and mended ones to her right. I wondered how much longer that trade would last. We had one final meal together, bacon, thick slices of homemade bread, and an omelet made from goose eggs. When the meal was done, I buckled on Mr. Bowditch's gun belt one last time. Then I dropped to one knee and put my palm to my forehead.
"No, no, Charlie, stand."
Her voice was still choked and furry, but improving every day. Every hour, it seemed. I got to my feet. She held out her arms. I didn't just hug her, I picked her up and swung her around, making her laugh. Then she knelt and fed my dog two scraps of bacon from her apron.
"Ray,"
she said, and hugged her.
"I love you, Ray."
She walked halfway up the hill with me, toward the hanging vines that covered the entrance to the tunnel. Those vines were greening up now. My pack was heavy on my back, and the sledgehammer I swung from my right hand was heavier, but the sun on my face felt fine. Dora gave me one final hug, and Radar one final pat. Tears stood in her eyes, but she was smiling. She could smile now. I walked the rest of the way on my own and saw another old friend was waiting for us, red against the growing green of the vines. Radar immediately went on her belly. The snab leaped nimbly onto her back and looked up at me, antennae twitching. I sat down next to them, slipped off my pack and unbuckled the flap.
"How are you doing, Sir Snab? Leg all healed up?"
Radar barked once.
"Good. That's good. But this is as far as you go, right? The air of my world might not agree with you."
Lying on top of the door knocker, wrapped in a Hillview High t-shirt, was what Dora had called an
"Vegemite,"
which I took to mean baby light. She was still having problems with consonants, but I thought that might improve in time. The baby light was a stub of candle inside a round of glass. I put my pack back on, tilted the glass sleeve, and lit the candle with a sulfur match.
"Come on, Raids. It's time."
She got to her feet. The snab jumped down. It paused, took one more look at us with its solemn black eyes, then hopped off into the grass. I saw it for a moment longer because it was moving in the still air and the poppies weren't. Then it was gone. I took a final look down the hill at Dora's house, which seemed ever so much better, cozier, in the sunshine. Radar looked back too. Dora waved from beneath her lines of hanging shoes. I waved back. Then I grabbed the sledgehammer and brushed aside the hanging vines, revealing the darkness beyond.
"Want to go home, girl?"
My dog led the way inside. 2. We reached the border between the worlds, and I felt the disorientation I remembered from my other trips. I staggered a little, and the baby light went out, even though there was no draft. I told Radar to wait and took another match from one of the empty bullet loops in Mr. Bowditch's concho belt. I struck a light on rough stone and relit the candle. The giant bats fluttered and cheeped overhead, then settled. We went on. When we came to the well with its spiral encirclement of narrow steps, I shielded the candle and looked up, hoping I wouldn't see light filtering down from above. Light would mean someone had moved the boards and bundles of magazines I'd used as camouflage. That would not be good. I thought I did see very faint light, but that was probably okay. The camouflage hadn't been perfect, after all. Radar went up 4 or 5 steps, then looked back at me to see if I was coming.
Nah, nah, doggy. Me first. I don't want you in front of me when we get to the top.
She obeyed, but very reluctantly. Dogs' noses are at least 40 times keener than those of humans. Maybe she could smell her old world up there, waiting. If so, it must have been an aggravating trip for her, because I had to keep stopping to rest. I was better, but not all better. Freed had told me to take it easy, and I was trying to follow the doctor's orders. When we made it to the top, I was relieved to see the final bundle of magazines, the one I'd balanced on my head like a load of wash, still in place. I stayed below it for at least a minute, probably more like 2 or 3, not just to rest this time. I had been eager to get home and still was, but now I was also scared. And a tiny bit homesick for what I'd left behind. In that world, there had been a palace and a beautiful princess and deeds of derring do. Maybe somewhere, off the coast of Seafront perhaps, there were still mermaids singing each to each. In the world below, I'd been a prince. In the one above, I'd have to write college applications and take out the trash. Radar bumped her muzzle into the back of my knee and gave 2 sharp barks. Who says dogs can't talk?
Okay, okay.
I head-lifted the bundle, stepped up, and shoved it aside. I pushed away the bundles on either side, having to work slowly because my left arm wasn't up to much. It's better now, but will never be what it was in my football and baseball days. Thanks, Petra, you bitch. Radar gave a few more barks just to hurry me along. I had no problem slipping between the boards I'd laid over the well's mouth. I had lost a lot of weight during my time in Empis, most of it in Deep Maline, but I had to wriggle out of the pack first and push it across the floor. By the time I got out, my left arm was singing. Radar popped out after me with disgusting ease. I checked the deep divot Petra's bite had left, afraid the healing wound might have broken open, but it looked okay. What surprised me was how cold it was in the shed. I could see my breath. The shed was just as I'd left it. The light I'd seen from below was filtering through the cracks in the sides. I tried the door and found it padlocked shut on the outside. Andy Chen had come through for me. I hadn't really believed anyone would check on the abandoned backyard shed for me, or my dead body, but it was still a relief. It meant, however, that I would have to use the sledgehammer, which I did, one-handed. Luckily, the boards were old and dry. One cracked on the first blow and broke out on the second, letting in a flood of Illinois daylight and a fine swirl of snow. With Radar barking encouragement, I broke through 2 more. Raids leaped through the gap and immediately squatted to pee. I swung the sledge 1 more time and knocked out another long piece of board. I tossed my pack through, turned sideways, and stepped out into sunshine. Also into 4 inches of snow. 3. Radar bounded across the yard, pausing every now and then to bury her snout and fling snow into the air. It was puppy behavior and made me laugh. I was overheated from my climb up the spiral stairs and my work with the sledge, so by the time I got to the back porch, I was shivering. It couldn't have been more than 25 degrees. Add the strong breeze blowing, and the real temperature was probably half that. I got the spare key from its spot under the mat, which Mr. Bowditch had called the unwelcome mat, and let myself in. The place smelled musty, and it was chilly, but someone,
almost certainly my dad, had turned the heat up a little to keep the pipes from freezing. I remembered seeing an old barn coat in the front closet, and it was still there. Also a pair of galoshes with red woolen socks flopping from the tops. The galoshes were tight on my feet, but I wouldn't be wearing them long, just down the hill. The gun belt and revolver went on the closet shelf. I'd put them back in the safe later, always assuming the safe with its secret stash was still there. We went out the back, around the house, and through the gate I'd had to climb over that first time in response to Radar's howls and Mr. Bowditch's weak cries for help. That now seemed like at least a century ago. I started to turn toward Sycamore Street Hill, but something caught my eye. In fact, I caught my eye. Because it was my face, on the phone pole at the intersection of Sycamore and Pine. My junior class photo, it so happened, and the first thing that struck me about it was how young I looked. There's a kiddie who didn't know nothing about nothing, I thought. Maybe he believed he did, but nah, nah. In big red letters above the picture, "Have you seen this boy?" In bright red letters below them, "Charles McGee Reed, age 17. And below that, "Charles Charlie Reed, disappeared in October of 2013. He is 6'4" and weighs 235 pounds. He was last seen, etc." I got stuck on two things: how weather-beaten the poster looked, and how wrong it was about my current weight. I looked around, almost expecting to see Mrs. Richland staring at me with her hand shading her eyes, but it was just Radar and me standing on the salted sidewalk. Halfway to the house, I stopped, caught by a sudden impulse, wild but strong, to turn around, to go back through the gate at One Sycamore, around the house, into the shed, down the winding stairs, and finally into Empis, where I would learn a trade and make a life, apprentice myself to Freed, perhaps, who would teach me to be a sawbones. Then I thought of that poster, and all the others like it, everywhere in town and all over the county, put up by my father and my Uncle Bob and my dad's sponsor, Lindy. Maybe all his other AA friends, too. If, that was, he hadn't resumed drinking. Please, God, no. I started walking again, the buckles of a dead man's galoshes jingling, and the dead man's rejuvenated dog at my heel. Trudging up the hill toward me was a little boy, in a quilted red jacket and snow pants. He was dragging a sled by a piece of clothes rope, probably bound for the sliding hill at Kavanaugh Park. "Hold up, kitty." He looked at me distrustfully, but stopped. "What day is it?" The words came out smoothly enough, but they seemed to have corners. I suppose that doesn't make any sense, but that's how they felt. And I knew why. I was speaking English again. He gave me a look that asked if I was born stupid or just grew that way. "Saturday." So my father would be at home, unless he was at an AA meeting. "What month?" Now the look said, duh.
"February?
2014?
Yeah. Gotta go."
He went on his way to the top of the hill, sparing my dog and me one distrustful glance back over his shoulder, probably to make sure we weren't following with ill intent. February. I'd been gone 4 months. Strange to think about, but not as strange as the things I'd seen and done. 4. I stood in front of the house for a minute or so, steeling myself to go inside, hoping I wouldn't find my father passed out on the couch with My Darling Clementine or Kiss of Death playing on TCM. The driveway had been plowed, and the walk was shoveled. I told myself that was a good sign. Radar got tired of waiting for me and ran up the steps, where she sat and waited to be let in. Once upon a time, I had had a key to the door, but it had been lost somewhere along the way. Like Claudia's trike, I thought. not to mention my virginity. Turned out it didn't matter. The door was unlocked. I let myself in, registered the sound of the TV, a news channel, not TCM, and then Radar was running down the hall, barking hello. When I entered the living room, she was on her back paws, the front ones planted on the newspaper my father had been reading. He looked at her, and then he looked at me. For a moment, he didn't seem to register who was standing in the doorway. When he did, shock loosened the muscles in his face. I'll never forget how that moment of recognition made him look both older, the man he would be in his 60s and 70s, and younger, like the kid he'd been at my age. It was as if some interior sundial turned both ways at once.
Charlie?
He started to stand up, but at first his legs wouldn't hold him and he plumped back down again. Radar sat beside his chair, thumping her tail.
Charlie? Is it really you?
It's me, Dad. This time he made it to his feet. He was crying. I started to cry, too. He ran for me, stumbled on an end table, and would have fallen if I hadn't caught him.
Charlie. Charlie, thank God I thought you were dead. We all thought that you were.
He couldn't talk anymore. I had a lot to tell him, but right then I couldn't talk either. We embraced each other, over Radar, who got between us, wagging her tail and barking. I think I know what you want, and now you have it. Here's your happy ending.